14. Origami design, Hasanor Faltung. Dublin Port, 16/10/2012. From the passenger side seat of the rented Nissan, Bet stares up at the cold Irish sky, at the low, mouldy scum of clouds pressing down on the world, and she says to Doc Twisby, she says, "A slow sort of country. Now here, you see, it takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. If you want to get somewhere, you must run at least twice as fast as that." And Doc Twisby asks her why she's quoting the Red Queen, and the albino twin fingers the shiny black ammonite she wears on a chain about her throat and says, "That tree back there," not bothering to explain which tree. "We've passed it several times already." Doc Twisby in the driver's seat, she assures Bet that it almost certainly isn't the same tree. After all, they've likely passed hundreds of trees since they got on the great asphalt crescent of the M50 at Palmerstown, headed north and then east, headed for the docks and a ferry out of Ireland. Repeatedly, she's told the twin how they got lucky at the fruit and vegetable market the day before, but luck being what it is, they shouldn't expect to get lucky again. Bet is folding thin sheets of crimson and green and lavender washi from an origami shop on Camden Street, folding paper cranes. Since she began just after dinner the night before, she's folded a whole boxful, but one can never be too cautious. "Step 3, she says aloud. "Fold the triangle in half by taking the left corner and folding it to the right. Step 4, take the top flap and open it, then crease both the right and left sides so that you can fold the top corner to the bottom corner." "Twisby," she says. "Dear, you probably have enough by now." But Bet shakes her head, and Twisby, she doesn't argue. She's learned to trust the twins' intuition in these, and most other matters. They pass blue exit signs printed in English and in Irish, and they pass other drivers and freight trucks and delivery vans, and Doc Twisby assures Bet that the turn-off for the ferry isn't much farther, and Bet, she assures the doc that they've just passed that same tree again. "You're sure?" asks Doc Twisby. And the twin, she speaks in the raspy voice she always uses when she's quoting the Red Queen. "That's right, though, when you say garden. I've seen gardens, compared with which this would be a wilderness." Doc Twisby nods and keeps her eyes on the road. When they reach France, she can try to sort out whatever it is that's happening to the twin psyche, whatever began when Bet folded an assassin that Albany had sent to murder them both. Disassociative fugue, depersonalization, transient schizoaffective disorder, what the fuck ever it is that's been shaken loose or turned wrong way around inside her head. These things are to be expected. These things were always inevitable. She is treading ground never trod before. "We're being watched, you know," says the twin. "We're being followed." And Twisby says, "Yes, love, but not by a tree, we're not." And Bet tells her, "She'll kill us if she ever finds us." Doc Twisby asks, "Who? Who will kill us?" "Bet," she says. "Step 14, take the right flap and fold it over to the left. In this instance, the left being north. Take the right flap and fold it north. I mean the Egyptian, le Gerif errant. Jerusalem in Sutari." They're coming up on the entrance to the Dublin tunnel, and traffic has slowed to a crawl. "She's not going to find us," says Doc Twisby, and the twin counters. "And Jesus said, I shall stand and rest, but thou shalt go on till the last day." Doc Twisby scowls and says, "Don't make her into more than she is. She's only a woman, no matter how much nonsense and mystique, and no matter how many tall tales Barbican wraps round her." The twin folds her crane, and she glances at the windshield, and she glances up at the low, mouldy sky above the windshield, and in her Red Queen voice she says, "You say that, love, but we run like rabbits, and you may call it nonsense if you like, but I've heard nonsense, compared with which that would be as sensible as a dictionary. Call it nonsense, and I will call us rabbits, and all the world will be your enemy, prince with 1,000 enemies, and whenever they catch you, they will kill you. But first they must catch you, thinks Doc Twisby, and she checks the clock on the dashboard and worries about missing their boat. I'm not even certain that she's Egyptian, says Bet, speaking in her own voice, beast twin, white shadow, pale fugitive. Though she's thought of herself as Egyptian so long now that I doubt she remembers the truth of it. She may be Persian. She may be Ethiopian. She may be the Queen of Sheba herself. Bet pauses, then adds, Nigra sum, sed formosa, and crosses herself. And then she recites steps 19 through 21. Now, she says, step 22, bend the wings downward at a 90-degree angle and you've finished a splendid origami crane. Doc Twisby, she asks how many that makes now, and the twin looks at the old shoebox of paper cranes in the back seat and replies, 210. So, just a few more then, asks the doc, and the twin nods her head. Yes. Just a few more. The traffic is moving again, and before long the tunnel swallows them down its long concrete gullet, and now there's no looming, conspiratorial sky to bear witness against them, no grey October sky to press them beneath its thumb, and no lurking, recurring trees. Bet wishes they could stop here. She wishes they could be like proper rabbits. Like any good child of El Herrera, and hunker down in the darkness broken only by the glaring LCD lights mounted on the tunnel ceiling, that they could dig in and wait until the wolves and the stoats and the hungry hunting birds with hooked claws and hooked beaks have all gone away. They could wait here, she thinks, until the Egyptian loses interest, until the storm blows over and her dying, divided sister finishes fighting monsters in Maine, until poor, brave Ivoire isn't dying anymore, until Ivoire crosses the sea on triumphant white wings and finds them waiting in the gloom. Bet presses her face to the window and watches the whitewashed cement walls rushing past. Quietness is wholeness at the centre of stillness, she says. The only evil is waste. These words rattle off her tongue like rosary beads pinched between pious Catholic fingers. She shuts her eyes for a moment, only to find Nora Swan waiting there for her. The assassin dutifully shoots herself, and Bet opens her eyes again and stares at the white tunnel wall. You're like the fairy, I think, Doc Twisby tells her. Will I? Asks the Red Queen, speaking from the lips of the twin. Look up, speak nicely, and don't twiddle your fingers all the time. Why will I like the boat? And so Doc Twisby tells her. It's called the MS Oscar Wilde, and it will carry us to Cherbourg. It has a movie theatre and restaurants and a perfume shop. It even has a beauty salon. Everything I'm saying is beginning to sound absurd, Doc Twisby thinks to herself. Lewis Carroll would be amused. Situation and anxiety is rendering her every word in shades of nonsense. It has a maximum capacity of 1,458 passengers, says Bet. Any one of them might be an operative, a butcher for Albany or a butcher for Y, or even one of your own who has decided they don't like the way you're playing the game. Doc Twisby gives her a look, gives the twins such a look, it would do murder if looks worked that way. And then the psychiatrist, she says, that, my dear, is why you're folding cranes. Now, you should stop staring out the window and get back to it. She doesn't ask the girl how it is she knows how many passengers the ferry can hold. She's learned enough to know there's no use in asking questions. But Bet, she's thinking how maybe this tunnel runs on and on forever, and how, if maybe it does, they won't ever need all those cranes after all. How maybe they can just keep going until the Nissan finally runs out of gas. And then what? The horse is dead. From here we walk, she thinks, and then she says it aloud. What? Asks Doc Twisby, and in the tale unfolding behind the twins' eyes, the Red Queen says, and so says Bet, I wonder if I shall fall right through the earth. How funny it'll seem to come out among the people that walk with their heads downwards. The antipathies, I think. Doc Twisby, sitting there behind the wheel, one wary eye on the road ahead and one warier eye on the twin, she answers, I think perhaps you've got the story mixed up again, love. Mind your page numbers, mind the volumes. But Bet, she says, I wonder what latitude or longitude I've got to, as if the psychiatrist hasn't spoken a word. And then she turns her face away from the window, away from the tunnel wall rushing past outside, and Twisby feels herself being peered into, and she knows this is what it felt like to be Nora Swan. And she thinks what Victor Frankenstein must have thought, staring into the eyes of his creature, and she expects the girl to open her mouth and say, for example, I ought to be thy Adam, but I'm rather the fallen angel. Instead, Bet says, we don't have to take the ferry. We don't have to swim the ocean. We don't have to fight the tide. We could stop right here, like all the people of El Arrera, and we could wait for Ivy to find us. We could be cunning and dig deep. Who'd think to look for us here? And in this moment, and not for the first time, Doc Twisby, she sees her possible doom and the possible doom of many other things besides, crouched here behind the impenetrable blue eyes of the twin. Victor Frankenstein, she thinks. Yes, but also Oppenheimer and also Marie Curie and Einstein and 1,000 other well-meaning fools who reached for the stars and lived to wish they'd not been half so ambitious, half so curious, half so clever and willing to trespass on the domain of 1,000 different deities, who were always fools themselves. You flatter yourself, Bet tells her. And the psychiatrist can almost feel the way the twin is rummaging around inside her head, squeezing in between left and right hemispheres, insinuating herself into cortical folds, between the grey matter topography of gyri and sulci. In the gloom beneath the earth, Doc Twisby sees, or only imagines that she sees, the predatory glint of red-gold eyeshine boring into her brain and into her soul. But there's no mistaking the twin's sudden mood swing, and there's no mistaking the desire to do harm crouched between the angry words of her experiment. Bet says, what we have done to Ivy, we deserve to die for that, you and I both, but you most of all. You deserve to die 1,000 times over for what you've done to her, for sending her away to fight a Jabberwocky with only that lunatic 66 at her side. Never mind the disease and the dope. You have not even warned her, have you? But I could stop it now. You don't think that I know that, but I do. I could stop it all right this very second, couldn't I? And Doc Twisby, not quite managing to hide the tremble in her voice, she says, we're almost out of the tunnel, love. We're almost to the boat. And remember, quietness is wholeness at the centre of stillness, and the only sin in all the world is waste. We stop now, and it's all been a waste. It's all been for nothing. All of Ivoire's pain and all your fear and sorrow and all of our running. But turbulent, seditious Bet, she says how maybe she doesn't care anymore. How maybe she's perfectly happy being a sinner in the hands of an angry god. If that means she can only put her arms about her sister again. And if that means she never has to have a gun aimed at her head again. And if it means, also, that she never again has to force an assassin to turn that gun on herself. Don't you think I know we're all but off the reservation now? Asks Bet of Doc Twisby. Don't you think I know you're flying blind, pretty much making it up as you go along, because maybe you're afraid Julia Set's about to cut her losses and pull the plug on your little horror show. Maybe it wasn't Albany that sent Nora Swan. Maybe it was the dogs who hold your chain. Now there's a bright pinpoint of pain behind Doc Twisby's eyes, and she knows that in another few seconds, or less, the twin could fold, just the same as she's been folding all those many pretty orisuru against their ruin. For Bet, it would be almost the easiest thing in the world. So, with nothing left to lose, Doc Twisby screws up a mad scientist's bottomless gall and audacity, and she quotes from a book she's read the twin twice over now. A book she's sewn through and through with suggestion and post-hypnotic contingency. Tearing the paper means you've stopped believing in the infinite possibilities of a square, she says, hardly louder than a whisper. And, just for a few seconds more, Bet glares defiantly back at her like a caged and tortured tiger, like a wild and hurting thing ready to break free and be done with its captivity. But then the rebellion is quashed, and all the fight drains out of her, and here again is only half a will, only a half portion of resolve, only sweet, compliant Bet, who wants nothing but to get all those paper cranes folded, just in case another wolf comes knock, knock, knocking at the door. And the car exits the tunnel into dim, clouded day, that seems, by comparison, almost bright as the surface of the sun. And Doc Twisby is ashamed at her relief, and ashamed, too, at the way her hands are shaking when she pays her £3 at the toll booth. She passes the receipt to Bet, and the twin makes of it another crane. "You'll like the ferry," says Doc Twisby to her little white lab rat. "You'll like Paris. I'll take you to the Natural History Museum on the Rue Cuvier, and you can see the dinosaurs there. You can tell me all about them." And Bet, she asks, "Do you think that would be safe? Don't you think that's just the sort of place they'll be looking for us?" And Doc Twisby pretends to smile a wise and knowing smile, and she tells the twin, "We shall see, little beastie. We shall see."